This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves. Today, I'm speaking with Seacoast, New Hampshire resident Andrea LeBlanc about an upcoming exhibition that she has worked to bring to New Hampshire. It is entitled The F Word, Images of Forgiveness, and was created by the Forgiveness Project. We're honored to have Andrea here to tell us about this presentation and about her personal journey. Welcome, Andrea.
Hello.
So, can you start by telling us what the Forgiveness Project is?
The Forgiveness Project is the brainchild of a woman in Britain whose name is Marina Cantacuzino, who I've not ever met, but who in the early part of 2004 joined forces with a photographer, Brian Moody, and the two of them started collecting stories of people, victims and perpetrators of, in some cases, very horrific crimes, who chose, rather than to pursue vengeance and retribution, have come together in many cases and have found forgiveness, and in some cases are working together for peaceful solutions to ongoing violence. The stories come from places all over the world, South Africa, Bosnia, Northern Ireland, the States, and seeing these pictures and reading the stories is a pretty profound experience. It was for me when I first saw it in April last year.
What form is the exhibition in? I understand there are photographs and then information about each photograph.
The exhibit consists of, I think, 24 or 27 panels of both a large poster-sized picture of the people involved, and then the text, and they're on freestanding frames. So it's a very kind of contemplative experience to be able to walk among these panels and take the time slowly to read the stories. When I first saw it in Oklahoma City last April, when a group of us were there for a workshop to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, and also to do a roundtable discussion, out of which came a documentary called Beyond Retribution. This was the first showing in the United States of the Forgiveness Project's The F Word exhibit. We were all very, very moved by the stories that we read, many of which have never been told or publicized anywhere else. Some people, Desmond Tutu and Father Lapsley, are well known to some, but many, many of these stories have never been told to the public.
Can you say more about how you got involved? You said that you went and saw the exhibit. Can you say more about your involvement in the Forgiveness Project and also with 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, which I know is the organization that you usually work with?
I'm not a member of the Forgiveness Project. We have kind of partnered, in a sense, with them only because of the happenstance of one of our members, Andrew Rice, who lives in Oklahoma City. He, when he was in South Africa, was asked by the Forgiveness Project people if he would be one of the stories. He lost his brother in 9/11 in the World Trade Center. So he brought the exhibit to Oklahoma City for the 10th anniversary of the bombing there. As a member of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, five of us traveled to Oklahoma City to participate in this workshop, which also included members of the Oklahoma City bombing, survivors, and people who had lost loved ones. Michael Berg, whose son was beheaded in 2004 on television. Father Michael Lapsley, who lost both hands and an eye to a letter bomb that he received when he was in exile. He was the chaplain to the ANC and received a letter bomb from the apartheid government. It was a pretty amazing group of people to sit and talk with, and then to have the chance to go and read the stories of all these other people who had all suffered horrific violence in their lives in one way or another, and have, like Peaceful Tomorrow's members, decided or come to the conclusion, reacted in a way that wasn't the way that society, I think, supposes a victim will or should react. There's an assumption that if you are the victim of a crime or of terrorism, that you will, of course, want retribution. And I think the thing that drew all of us together was our individual responses that didn't fit this picture. I, for one, am very grateful that September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows exists, because I felt very much alone after September 11th. I just couldn't join in the sentiment, the rhetoric of wanting more violence, retribution. I don't think that ever has solved anything, and I certainly don't think it has solved anything since 9/11. The members of Peaceful Tomorrows have taken it upon themselves to network with other victims of terrorism all over the world, in Spain and Japan. I spent last summer in Japan and London, in Brazil and Colombia and Italy, in South Africa. It's an amazing feeling for me to be a part of this network. And it's very, I don't know what the word is, inspiring, hopeful, that there are all these people all over the world for whom violence is just not the answer. I feel so much more a part of that community than I do sometimes even a citizen of the United States. I think that there's wisdom there that I don't find when I hear the angry talk.
And Andrea, you lost your husband on September 11th.
My husband was professor of cultural geography at the University of New Hampshire for 35 years. He had retired in 1999. I think Bob would most definitely have been opposed to certainly the war in Iraq, and I suspect the bombing of Afghanistan, where, you know, we accomplished very little except to kill countless innocent people.
Why do you think this project is so important that you worked so hard to bring it here to New Hampshire? What are you hoping that people will take from it and learn from it?
In my heart of hearts, I would really love for this exhibit to be, if not permanently, at least moving about within the cities and towns of this country, where the average person would just come upon it. The stories are so amazing, and I really hope that many, many people come to it. These are ordinary people, and I think that when you read the stories and discover that people whose lives in many cases have been torn apart, who have had great losses, have chosen to respond in a way that doesn't involve retribution, doesn't involve more violence, doesn't involve hatred. In many cases, I would read the same sentiments that we have a choice, and we can choose to let our lives continue to be dominated by hatred. We can continue to be victims, or we can choose to forgive, or to at least learn to see that there's a better, another way of dealing with violence. I honestly think that every person involved in this project probably would agree that violence only begets more violence. And somehow, out of their particular pain, these people have chosen to not respond in a very, I don't know, it's been described as instinctive animal instinct to retaliate. And there are people who have said, well, is it not possible for the human species to evolve beyond that? I think it is. You know, I think it is. I think we have a choice. We aren't just instinctive beings. We have a mind. We have reason. We can look at what happens when violence is perpetuated, and we can make a choice.
I'd like to read this quote from the exhibit, quote by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Forgiveness does not mean condoning what has been done. It means taking what has happened seriously, drawing out the sting in the memory that threatens to poison our entire existence. In the telling of stories like these, there is real healing. I'd like to ask you what forgiveness means to you and how it's coming forth in the exhibit. The term forgiveness, I'm not sure everyone would define it the same way, and I'm wondering how you might define it or see this exhibit as defining it.
Well, I'm not sure that everyone involved in this exhibit, and even September 11th family members who we've come together to talk about it, define it in the same way or feel that they even are able to forgive. It's true that anger is a normal reaction, and many people have said that as long as they feel the anger, they'd feel incapable of forgiving. But I'm not sure that that's really the point. Father Lapsley, in a conversation I had with him last April, I said, you know, I never felt angry. I felt sad. So I'm not sure how I can talk about what I've done with my anger. And he very quietly said, I'm not angry either, but I don't know who to forgive, because he doesn't know who sent the letter bomb, you know? And he said, I'm hoping someday that someone will come and knock on my door and say, I sent that letter. I sent that bomb. And then I'll have someone to forgive. It was a pretty profound experience to sit there and listen to these stories. It's when I was in Japan last summer, I had the opportunity to speak with a group of Japanese hibakusha, the survivors of the A&H bombs. We were talking about choice and the fact that we do have choices. Things happen. You can be angry or you can be profoundly sad. And in either case, the anger or the despair can ruin your life. You have a choice to make about what you're going to do with those feelings. You may not have the choice about the feelings that arise, but how you respond to them is a choice. One of the things that came out of South Africa that developed after the apartheid government was defeated was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And also Father Lapsley has the Healing of Memories Institute. And essentially people have come together and told their stories. And in that, there is a recognition of the other person as a human being. It's harder to discredit or deny the humanity of someone if you actually see them, hear their stories, understand what they've suffered in their lives, etc., and listen to their remorse, their pain. I think it comes of understanding. There's a huge problem when we think we know what someone else's life is like and why they do the things they do. There's another quote from Solzhenitsyn. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? I mean, I think in many cases people have said, you know, we're all capable of doing horrific things. And knowing that the evil and the good are embodied in every one of us is important to realize.
Where can people go to find out more about the project?
The Forgiveness Project will be exhibited at the Oyster River High School on April 1st as a part of the Art and Craft of Teaching Peace. It's the second Teaching Peace conference at Oyster River High School. It will stay through April 3rd so that students and public can see it, I think, into the early afternoon on April 3rd. Then the exhibit will move to the Memorial Union Building at the University of New Hampshire, where it will be for the 4th and 5th. It then moves to Concord, New Hampshire, to the South Congregational Church on Pleasant Street from the 6th through the 10th. Then it comes back to the Durham Community Church and will be there from the 11th through the 14th. There are a number of programs and events that will be associated with the project, and it will certainly be open to the public. The night of the 11th, there will be an interfaith service with many area clergy.
There's also a general website about the project.
Mm-hmm. The Forgiveness Project website is www.theforgivenessproject.com.
And as far as local happenings, is there a website to find that information about times and such?
SeacoastPeaceResponse.org.
What other resources for the groups and projects you're involved in are there? Where can people learn more about, for instance, September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows?
September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows website is just www.peacefultomorrows.org. There's information about all the activities, the various members all over the country and some out of the country. The DVD that I mentioned, Beyond Retribution, you would click on a photo icon that says our new DVD. Stonewalk information about last summer's epic event. We walked with a 2-ton granite stone to commemorate the civilian casualties of war from Nagasaki to Hiroshima, 370 miles. We pulled it on a caisson that had steel wheels and a steering wheel and a brake, but no power except for people power. And it was an amazing way to see Japan. People would come and leave and come back. It was like we were a bit like the Pied Piper, you know. And it was lovely because we had people in their 70s, we had mayors of towns, we had school children, we had families, we had students. It was a lovely experience. Monks, people of all faiths, we stayed in churches and temples and people's homes and schools and community centers all along the way. And the Stonewalk information you can find at www.stonewalk.org.
Where is the stone now?
The stone is in Hiroshima, and it's on the grounds of the National Cathedral for Peace, which was built by the Germans primarily, but I think other countries contributed, and it seemed a fitting place. There's talk right now among the Japanese, who we worked with last summer, about taking the stone to Korea, which would be an enormous undertaking, but a really good one. When I was in Japan last year, at the end, on August 6th, there's this huge ceremony in Hiroshima which commemorates the bombing, and it was the 60th anniversary of this last year. I read an apology from the members of Peaceful Tomorrows to the Japanese people for the bombing. There were many Japanese people who came up and thanked me and said that now it was their turn to go apologize to the Koreans. Mm. To me, that's a huge step forward. You know, I don't think our governments are ever going to do that, but we as individual people can do it.
Do you have hopes, speaking of governments, of our government, the U.S. government, finding a way to embody or live up to some of these ideas and ideals that projects such as Stonewalk or the Forgiveness Project are putting forth?
I think we always have to have hope. And to me, that's one of the things that the Forgiveness Project does, is it gives me hope, because there are people who understand this. I was very struck by the fact that in both peace museums in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, there's a lot of space given to telling the story of what the Japanese were doing, the responsibility of the Japanese before World War II. I think owning one's responsibility is enormously important. It's a beginning. And I really wish that a similar kind of admission or clear-sighted look at our culpability for what culminated in 9/11, you know, our long history of foreign policy that in many ways has created such animosity among other people in other countries. And I would love it. I think it would be a huge step if the Ground Zero Memorial had some such statement. I have no hope that it will. But having said that, we talk about our government like it's some other entity. We are this government. And until we hire the people, elect the people who will do what we need them to do, then we're not being responsible. I mean, if enough of us say this is what we need to do, then yes, I think there's hope that this government, our government, can be effectively decreasing some of the poverty, the pain and suffering, the inequities in this world. And I think that's what the war on terror should be about.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Andrea, and good luck with all of your wonderful work.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.